Hello and welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters hopes to increase your ecological intelligence by bringing you news and reports from around the world.
There is nothing that affects as much as the municipality. The municipalities are the ones that actually have the closest link to the citizens.
That's Gil Penalosa, founder and chair of 880 Cities, a successful Canadian-based international nonprofit organization grounded on a simple but powerful concept which still guides much of his work. What if everything we did in our cities had to be great for an 8-year-old and an 80-year-old? The one-time Parks Commissioner of Bogota, Colombia, Penalosa has traveled to more than 300 communities across the globe, scouting for the best ideas to improve life for people of all ages. Gil and his staff at 880s work to make it easier and safer for people of all ages to walk, bike, and enjoy parks, trails, and public spaces. I caught up with Penalosa the week before he made a presentation to the city of Burlington, a suburb of Toronto, Canada. In this interview, he mentions a few local features, such as the placement of Burlington being on the edge of Lake Ontario, framed with the beautiful Niagara Escarpment in its backyard, and Bronte Park, owned by the provincial government, bordering on the city of Burlington.
I was invited is because Burlington is working on their park strategy, on their parks and open spaces. And also Burlington is working on developing how to develop the link with public transit and developing some nodes and urban parks. So I've been asked to come on Thursday night. I'm doing a presentation that is open to anyone. Over 100 people have already registered from the community, and the mayor and some councilors were going to attend. But then also the following day on Friday, there's going to be an all day workshop with the city staff, mixing people from all departments. There's people from planning and transportation and parks, and it was very nice. They invited public health from the region, and they also invited people from the Board of Education. And so it's a big mix on, and they are going to be working a little bit on the visioning of the parks, and they have asked me to do a presentation to open up, and then to stay around and so provide support in the working groups, and then at the end of the day make some comments.
You touch on a couple of different things that I want to talk about. One of them is that when you do a presentation, you are often invited and you encourage the invitation to participate with the local municipality staff and councillors to give them an idea of the vision that you and the 8-80s organization brings. And you can talk about local things, but you can also talk about the success that you've had in over 300 cities around the world. Let's start back a little bit and talk about your beginnings as the Parks and Recreation Commissioner in Bogota. What was it that sort of sparked your interest along these lines to get involved, as opposed to just rubber stamping whatever the city council said at the time?
When I was commissioner, for example, we in just one term we built over 200 parks, and left lots of designs for hundreds of more. And the following term, one of my brothers was mayor, and another 600 were built. So within two terms, we built over 800 parks all over the city. It was something massive. Up till then, I have been mostly in the private sector, but I got involved because I think that from the point of view of parks and recreation and open streets and bikeways and trails, it really is about improving the quality of life of everybody. Even doing parks in areas with very poor people, sometimes people will question, you know, why are you doing parks in such low-income areas when the poor people have so many needs? I said, yeah, if you really care about poor people, when the poor people feel miserable, it's in the leisure time. When they are working the CEO of a bank or a minimum wage worker cleaning the floors have a similar experience. Maybe even the CEO has more anxiety. But on the leisure time, on the weekends, the CEO has theaters and restaurants and country clubs and cottages and travels. And so the minimum wage worker doesn't have options. So if we improve how the low-income people are using the leisure time, we're really improving the quality of life of everybody. So that was something that I was obsessed. How could we really improve quality of life of everyone? And also, how could we use parks and streets and open spaces, all public spaces, as something where we could work on as equalizers, and how this would improve the environment and economic development and happiness, and also thinking about health, both physical health and mental health. So those were some of the driving forces. And then I moved to Canada about 20 years ago this May, and I've been obsessed with the topic, and I founded 880 Cities about 13 years ago. And 880 Cities has a simple but powerful concept. Is what if everything that we did in our city, the sidewalk, the crosswalk, the park, the library, the restaurant, the building, everything had to be great for an 8-year-old and for an 80. It's not 8 to 80, but it's 8 and 80 as an indicator species. Mm-hmm. Because if it's good for the 8 and it's good for the 80, it's going to be good for everybody from 0 to over 100. We need to stop building cities as if everybody was 30-year-old and athletic, and build cities for all. So that is the concept of 880, which is totally integrated in issues related to parks and public spaces, streets, sidewalks, plazas, but also issues such as sustainable mobility, walking, cycling, riding public, taking public transit, new uses of cars, and so on.
And open spaces and parks are an easy way. It's a low cost, low risk, but it's high visibility. That's one of your tenants, one of the platforms that you build on.
Yes, well, especially I think that I recommend to cities to start with. Sometimes I tell them, let's work on impatiens and orchids. Impatiens are these flowers that are really inexpensive and easy to grow. So I said, what is impatiens? Things that you can do in the next 12 months that is low cost, low risk, and high visibility. Mm-hmm. So then you can do the orchids in years 2 to 5. I never talk over 5 years because I said, if you really want to do it, you can do it in the next 5 years. Otherwise, it's because you don't really want to do it. But and then with impatiens, people can come up and do lots of things. Part of it is like uses and activities. And I think that in many ways, from the point of view of parks and open spaces, Burlington is, God was very generous with Burlington. Mm-hmm. Because you have the beautiful Lake Ontario. You're kind of hugged. It's being hugged by Lake Ontario and the escarpment and the Bronte Park. And then the built environment by people. By the way, one of the things that I have thought many times, Bronte Park has to be free, the entrance. I think this is absolutely crazy that the provincial government charges the entrance. And if the Liberals didn't change that, unfortunately, even less the dog port is going to change it. That is a public space. That is a magnificent space that even most people in Burlington don't even know that it exists. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's twice the size of Central Park in New York. Actually, when you're thinking of places where you could densify Burlington and Oakville, it's around the Bronte Provincial Park. It's magnificent. Mm-hmm. But I think once you are inside, you should be able to charge for the activities. Okay, if you want to go swimming in the summer or you want to go skating in the winter, okay, you might have to pay something. But if you want to go and walk or bike or go for a run, or it should be absolutely free. That should be almost the right as a citizen. If I'm a citizen of Canada, if I'm a citizen of Burlington, I should have the right to go. Also because we need many, many, many more people using Bronte Provincial Park. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, if you don't get a lot of people using it, then you get people like the existing government that keeps talking that it's open for business, but has never really said what open for business means. Because I think that all governments in general are open for business, but not from business from the point of view of private sector. Because people say, like next to near Burlington in Mississauga, Hazel McCallion used to say all the time, "Oh, we want to run like a business." What do you mean run like a business? 9 out of 10 businesses go broke. So you want to be like the 9 out of 10, or you want to be like the 1 out of 10? No, of course we need the public sector to be efficient and to be professional and so on. But that doesn't mean that it's like a business. And in the case, I'm really worried that when people don't use the parks as much as they should, like in the case of Bronte, maybe a private developer might come up with a brilliant idea that they want to do a golf course, or that they might want to do a convention center, or they might want to do a casino, who knows what, on Bronte. And they might say, "Oh, province, if you give me half of it to develop a tourist complex, I'm willing to maintain the other half for free," quote unquote for free. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, with this obsession of open for business, then they might say, "Oh, you know what? A great idea. We don't need all that part. We could give half of it to a convention center and hotels and tourism, and they maintain the other half for park, and it's not going to cost us anything." And that would be absolutely horrible. I mean, nothing like that would ever happen in a place like Central Park in New York, because you have 25 million people visiting the park every year.
Right.
So if anybody tries to take 1 square meter from Central Park, they would impeach the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
here in Toronto, when you have parks that are not well used, that can happen. You know, actually, you can see it in Downsview Park in Toronto, that is not managed by the city, but is managed by the federal government. The federal government gave it to, it's being managed by the Canada Lands Corporation. They have been giving away lots of pieces of the Downsview Park, and no one complains. So they have beautiful, gigantic hangars, and then they give it to a woman's... The Toronto soccer team, TFC, asked for and then they gave them also like 10 hectares or something to the TFC. I mean, what is TFC? Just because they play soccer, we should give them away a piece of park? I mean, in Central Park, if they're going to give 1 square foot to the New York Yankees, they would make a huge fight.
Mm-hmm.
The TFC is a private team like Loblaws is. Should we give 10 hectares to Loblaws or whatever? There is no difference. So same thing that is happening in Downsview, and no one said anything. Eventually something might happen in Bronte Provincial Park, and no one is going to complain because you don't have the users. But instead, if you had 2, 3, 4 million people visiting Bronte Provincial Park every year, it would be totally different. And those are the kind of things that I think also Burlington should fight with the province to say, okay, you know, we need to have free access to that park. Charge for the service. If you want to go camping, you got to pay. But for walking, cycling, and of course, is how is the city going to do inside those three, the lake, the escarpment, and Bronte, all the internal parts, including where Burlington is intensified.
You mentioned the default is for a developer to come in and propose something, and it makes revenue for the municipal or provincial tax base. Everybody's happy. That's the default. That's the system that we have right now. How can we change it so that the average citizen feels more empowered and more demanding? They should knock on the door and say, "This is a park. We should be able to walk in free. It doesn't belong to anyone. We need a space to walk. We need a space to ride our bicycle, to enjoy family time. Why not give us this opportunity?" What is blocking citizens from demanding those things?
Well, that in itself is that's a provincial park, not municipal. But nevertheless, also Burlington should worry about it because the citizens don't care. The citizens don't know what is municipal, what is regional, what is provincial. For the citizens, everything is the same if it's public, it's government, if one government is it. But nevertheless, what is the default? You know, with the parks is something that is really, it's very curious how the parks work, because it works very different than most of the services that cities provide. When you're talking about water or hydro or whatever, if you don't have it, it generates lots of insatisfaction. Mm-hmm. But if you have it, it doesn't provide any satisfaction. So if you once you have water and hydro, you come into your house, you turn on the light, you don't say, oh, thank you. Oh, I'm so happy with the light. Mm-hmm. It provides insatisfaction if it doesn't exist, but it doesn't provide satisfaction if it exists. On the case of the park, just opposite. It doesn't provide as much insatisfaction when it doesn't exist, but it provides infinite satisfaction once it exists. It's endless satisfaction. You go to the park today and you are so happy walking around or playing baseball or whatever. You go tomorrow and again it's satisfaction. The next day and again it's satisfaction. It's not that if you're already satisfied. No, every day you are more and more satisfied. Every day you are more and happy. So it's more difficult with the parks to develop that to take from non-existent to existence, because it doesn't generate that much insatisfaction. How to change the chip? Part of changing the chip is to work on the benefits. It's not about the parks. It's about physical health. It's about mental health. It's about climate change. It's about economic development. It's about mobility. So the parks are a means to having a great Burlington for everyone. It's not the end. So I would say that part of it is working around that. And we're facing huge crisis. For example, there is a huge problem of obesity all across Canada. Mm-hmm. Canada, we have more than doubled the obesity in the last 25 years. We have gone from 13% to almost 30%, 29%. So we clearly need to be more active. We are also having huge problems of mental health. And mental health, part of it is about socializing. Part of it is nature. Nature is very, very important for mental health. That's why Bronte Park is important. That's why the neighborhoods are important. That's we need to have nature everywhere, at home, in the schools, in the sidewalks, in the provincial park, and everywhere. So we need to work is around those benefits. Also, from the point of view of economic development, the reality is that every day the leaders of Burlington, both in the public and private sector, should be waking up thinking, how can we attract and retain the best people? Today we live in an ever more globalized world, and in a globalized world, the best people, they can live anywhere they want to. However you define best, it can be the best medical doctors or engineers or pizza makers. If I'm a really good carpenter, I can live anywhere. So where am I going to live? Whatever I have quality of life. Mm-hmm. So all of these things is also about economic competitiveness. There's many, many studies that show, like, millennials, they want to live in places where there are parks with walking distance. By the way, sometimes people say, in Burlington, should we have small parks, given the fact that we already have the Scarpment and we have Bronte? Yes, you need to have small, you need to have medium, you need to have large, because they satisfy very different needs. The small neighborhood park is where we are going to develop the sense of belonging. Is where we're going to meet our neighbors. So also we're going to develop solidarity, because if we know our neighbors and something is happening out, we go out and help. But if we don't know anybody and something is happening, we close the door and stay inside. But we're not going to be able to play soccer in the neighborhood park, so we need to have a medium-sized park. And we're not going to be able to go canoeing, so we need a big one. So we need in Burlington a citywide park system. where we have the small parklet, this neighborhood park, the medium size, the large one, and where we also have different activities. It's not just about doing soccer fields. We got to have active recreation, but also passive and contemplative. It's about having a citywide park system.
Now, you're on record as saying everyone should have a park within a 10-minute walk of his or her home.
It's absolutely critical. Everybody, right. Children or older adults, everybody should have one. And if you don't have one, you should do one. And if you don't have the space to do one, then work with the school board and make sure that you improve the playgrounds and they're within walking distance. Or worst case scenario, close a street in a neighborhood and make it a play street. But that is critical.
And one of the other things you did, rather than just talk about open space parkland, you also look at the cityscape, the streetscape, and say, why not close it off for a day, as you did in Bogota, and make it a walking mall every Sunday? So tell us a little bit about how a city can transform something like a street into a pop-up park, if I can use that term.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what it is. It's a pop-up park that is used a few hours per week. And when people look at Burlington from the air, 35% of it are streets. 35%. Mm-hmm. It's huge. One-third of our cities are streets, and they are public space. They belong to everybody, young, old, rich, poor. If you drive, if you don't drive, it doesn't matter. They belong to everybody. So they can have different uses according to the time of the day or the day of the week or the week of the year. What we did in Bogota is we took this and I found a program, a very small, about a few kilometers, and we turned it into the world's largest pop-up park. We do 120 kilometers every Sunday and holiday of the year. So we do about 64 days of the year. And one out of four citizens come out, and they walk, and they bike, and they skate. And along the route, if people don't want to walk or bike or run, then we do aerobics or Tai Chi or cha-cha-cha. Anything, the common denominator is physical activity. And this is something that is really, really great. And not only is great for recreation, but it's also has many other benefits. One, social integration. When you interconnect different areas of the city and different income levels and so on, it's great also from the point of view of health, because then people come out and they are physically active. And if they are active on Sundays, they could be active any other time. It's good for mental health. It's good for the environment. We measure like the level of the noise on the street during the program and the level of the noise on Monday in the same place, and it's totally different. Or we also measure the quality of the air, and it's very different. So this is something that is totally doable, and it would be great for Burlington to do it. I mean, one recommendation from a city of Burlington is why not do it once a month this year, May through September, from Victoria Day to Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Do it once a month. And then if at the end of the year it doesn't work, okay, then you don't do it again. But if it works, then next year you do it weekly instead of monthly. I mean, you are not building arenas or gymnasiums. So it's about changing people's mindset. Mm-hmm. Look, not only I've worked in many cities, like I have worked in over 350 different cities. For example, in India, they didn't have this 7 years ago, and now they have it in 100 cities. But if people in Burlington, they're a little snobby and they don't want to be like Bogota or India, well, Paris. Paris does it every Sunday, including the winter. Paris is doing it 52 Sundays of the year. Mm-hmm. New York is doing it. And there are many small cities of 50,000 people, cities of 100,000, of 1 million, 10 million. So it's something that is totally doable, and it helps to change minds. It's also good for business. You do it on Sunday, so most businesses are not open in the morning, so it doesn't really have an impact. And the other thing is that this doesn't really shut down the city, because what you do is you do some of these roads, but people stop at all the at the main intersections. So mm-hmm. if you have a traffic light, then people that are walking or cycling, they stop and they allow cars to go through. It's not like if you're doing a marathon that you cannot tell the runners to stop because the light changed. But it's also a nice way, like if you connected with the Bronte Provincial Park or you connected with other parks, it also becomes kind of like a means to not only an end. People use, here in Canada and the U.S., we call it open streets. So people not only use the open streets as an end, but as a means. They make connections. Sometimes they got some main roads that are kind of like the spinal cord with some smaller ones coming from the neighborhoods so that you connect different parks or theaters or museums or things that people can access to, and then people end up getting to know other parts of the city. Maybe they have not been to Bronte Park and you have it connected. Maybe some people in the north side don't know much about the waterfront facilities, then you connect all of the waterfront. So it's that's part of how it works, and it's something that really benefits everybody and is totally doable.
Right.
And as I say, the risk is nothing. Mm-hmm. Instead, the benefits could be huge. So I think it's good for Burlington also to start thinking about being bolder. One of the things sometimes that happens in the municipalities and the GTA, including Burlington, is that, of course, Burlington is good, but it's far from great. And then people say, oh, but we're already good. And then they find a magazine that said that Burlington is one of the top five municipalities in Canada. No, tell people, if you love Burlington, don't give us any awards. Because when they give them awards, then citizens and decision makers become very reluctant to change. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we need to change. So Burlington should be comparing itself with the best cities in the world. Mm-hmm. Burlington should be saying, okay, we cities are of around 200,000 people with similar income levels, similar weather. Okay, which ones have the highest index of happiness? Which one have the highest park uses? Which ones have the best quality of air, environment, tree canopy, walkability, bikeability, public transit, and then compare itself with those. Like Burlington should be benchmarking with cities like Malmo in Sweden, like Odense in Denmark, like Victoria in BC, like Boulder in Colorado. Because then all of a sudden, then they said, oh, you know, but we are better than this. And of course, Burlington is good. Mm-hmm. If you wanna compare Burlington with cities that are worse, in 10 minutes you do a list of 1,000 cities.
Yeah.
But then if you compare yourself with cities that are worse, eventually you are gonna look like those.
Yeah.
Instead, if you compare yourself with cities that are the best, then eventually you're gonna look like those as well. Like if you're gonna talk about bikeability, you should not be comparing yourself with Mississauga or Hamilton. You should be comparing yourself with Malmo. Malmo is a city of similar size that was 20 years ago was horrible in cycling and today is fantastic. Why can Malmo do it and not Burlington? I mean, Burlington should say, I don't care if in Canada the obesity is 29%. In Burlington, we're going to be the healthiest city. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Burlington wants to be, the healthiest, the happiest, whatever. But it's also about being bold. It's comparing, for example, Vancouver, they said in 2008, we're going to be the most sustainable, but not the most sustainable in BC, not even the most sustainable in Canada, the most sustainable in the world. Mm. And then they created a plan that by 2020, in 12 years, they were going to be the most sustainable with 11 different actions, and every 6 months they review. So maybe Burlington should say, oh, we're going to be the healthiest, or we're going to be the whatever. And whatever it decides, it should be moving in that direction. But being bold and not just say, oh, no, yeah, we're good enough. No, Burlington should not be a good enough city. Burlington should be a really fantastic place.
Well, Gil Pelenosa, founder and chair of 880 Cities, you are truly a visionary and it's been a great pleasure to speak with you. And I encourage people to go to 880cities.org to find out more.
Please join us for the next episode of Earth Matters, where we talk further with Gil Pelenosa about transit and transportation.